takes only a few hundredths of a second, can cause you to see a bright flash in your eyes that lasts a long time. Seeing such lights is common in conditions like migraine and epilepsy. You have a choice whether to call brain time the real thing or your experience the real thing. But in actuality, neither is more real than the other, for the simple reason that we can't step outside our brains in order to capture real time. Walking out of a movie is easy. Walking out of this waking dream isn't. So how does the brain learn to keep time? We could look to the chemical reactions taking place inside brain cells, which, like all other cells, are chemical factories. These reactions, along with the electrical activity that lights up on an fMRI scan, are precisely timed. One crucial activity is the exchange of sodium and potassium ions across the outer membrane of a brain cell. An ion is an electrically charged atom or molecule, either positive or negative. The time this takes is infinitesimally small, but it's not instantaneous. So there's your basic brain clock, or a key part of it. Unfortunately, the brain's clock isn't attached to the experience of time. While all those ions are clicking away, time can be behaving any way it wants in dreams, hallucinations, under disease conditions, in moments of inspiration, or other uncanny moments when time stands still. Clicking ions tell us nothing about the behavior of time. And anyway, there would be no ions in the first place without the Big Bang. We are at the same dead end where the mystery began. The cosmic chicken and egg question is still up for grabs. Or maybe not. The so-called dead end has actually revealed an important clue. Time is springing into existence with every firing of a neuron in the brain. Its creation is constant. For as long as a person is alive, he or she is creating time. We never run out. When someone says, "I ran out of time," of course they really mean that they didn't meet a deadline. Therefore, we don't have to go back to the Big Bang. To ask where time came from isn't really about the universe. It's about our experience here and now. There is no other time. Solving the mystery of time will tell us if humans are the creators of time or its unwitting victims, the pawns of brain activity. There seems to be no other choice. If time depends on the brain and vice versa, we are talking about one of the most important ways that every person participates in the universe. Before relativity, the belief that everyone shares the same experience of time formed a kind of cosmic democracy. We were all equal in how time operated. This condition can be called a Galilean democracy, after the great Italian Renaissance scientist Galileo Galilei, because of some crucial observations by Galileo that reinforced common sense reality. For example, if someone going past you in a car throws a ball moving in the same direction, the speed of the ball can be reliably calculated, and the result will always be the same. A car moving at 60 miles per hour might have a major league pitcher as a passenger. If he throws a fastball at the record speed of 105.1 miles per hour, set in 2010 by Aroldis Chapman of the Cincinnati Reds, the actual speed of the ball will be 165.1 miles per hour, which is arrived at by adding the speed of the car to the speed of the ball. The Galilean democracy was good enough as long as there was a fixed point to stand on. To the pitcher in the car, the ball only travels 105.1 miles per hour, because he is already moving as fast as the car is. However, Einstein pointed out that there is actually no fixed spot in the universe for measuring time. Every observer is in motion relative to every other observer. No one can prove for sure who is moving and who is not moving, at least for constant motions. Therefore, all measurements are relative, depending on how fast two things are moving past each other. Relativity toppled the Galilean democracy. A reality equal for all participants in it was no longer a reliable possibility. If you were in a spaceship traveling at the speed of light, and you shoot a ray gun off your port bow, the photons from your gun would also travel at the speed of light. Unlike the baseball pitcher in a speeding car, you can't add the speed of your spaceship to the speed of the photons you're firing. By traveling at the speed of light, you are already at the absolute limit for all observers in all moving frames of reference. Einstein showed that the rate of time passing would depend on the frame of reference one is in. Thus, relativity dismantled forever the assumption that everyone's experience of time is the same. Time is not universally the same for every observer. We are like free-floating points in space, where only local time applies. But if you look at it another way, every observer defines the time frame he is experiencing and can change that time frame by moving faster or slower, in a sharper curve, or by approaching a strong gravitational field. The Galilean democracy has turned into an Einsteinian democracy. In fact, it's a universal democracy, which has brought with it more freedom of participation. The constants are still there. The speed of light will impose the same limitation on how fast an object can move through space-time. But instead of acting like a prison wall hemming us in, the constants are like the rules of a game. You must play by the rules. But as long as you do, you can make any move you want, whether the game is chess, football, or mahjong. Science has a tendency to lean too far toward the rules. Since electromagnetic waves travel at the speed of light in empty space, for example, they won't change speed anywhere in the cosmos. Fixing the speed of light as an absolute was a desirable achievement from the standpoint of making calculations, because it removed the unreliability of subjective time. The scientific viewpoint, which says that the brain is bound by the speed of electric currents, is just that, a viewpoint. In Einstein's democracy, each person is free to put the rules first or freedom first. There is no absolute place to stand. The constant speed of electromagnetic waves is a boundary our brains must respect. But our minds are allowed freedom of thought. We can play any mental game we choose. And in the end, all games are mental. The speed of light doesn't constrict our humanity, only our neurons. When relativity toppled absolute time, it also toppled space. As with time, space looks distorted when measured at different moving frames of reference. According to relativity, a stationary observer watching a spaceship approaching the speed of light would see its length being shortened in the direction of its forward motion. In everyday life, we don't subjectively perceive these relativistic effects in space and time, because the speeds we're accustomed to are tiny compared with the speed of light. In particle accelerators, however, such as the Large Hadron Collider, LHC, in Geneva, Switzerland, where the Higgs boson was discovered, it's routine to accelerate subatomic particles to speeds approaching the speed of light. That's one place on Earth where relativistic effects are measurable and totally accepted as a fact of nature by the experimenters. In a word, we can visualize what time could be like as it enters creation. Think of pop-up books, which lie flat like ordinary books, but when opened, suddenly open up into a house, animals, an elaborate landscape, and even have moving parts. Creation is like that when viewed at the quantum level. There's flatness, and suddenly there are objects in space-time. Everything pops up at once. Therefore, the isolated behavior of particles isn't really indicative of reality. In order for a tree, a cloud, a planet, or the human body to exist, there isn't really a piling up of subatomic particles, atoms, and molecules the way bricks are assembled to build a house. Instead, the subatomic particles bring space and time with them. This fact has astonishing implications. For example, a particle moving close to the speed of light may decay in a short amount of time, measured in millionths of a second. But it will last longer as observed by physicists in a laboratory that's stationary with respect to the moving particle. A particle that moves exactly at the speed of light lasts forever, because for it, time doesn't pass. It seems to stand still. As far as light is concerned, time doesn't exist, while from our perspective, in a world cordoned off by the speed of light, the lifetime of a photon is infinitely long. Photons, the particles of light, have zero mass. If a particle, any particle, has a finite mass, it can never reach the speed of light. Now we have proof for one of the seemingly impossible ideas this chapter started with. Eternity is at our doorstep. Light, which is timeless, gave rise to life on Earth and continues to sustain it. Therefore, the real question is how two opposites, time and the timeless, relate to each other. Time, space, and matter spring out of flatness all at once. And when solid objects get dragged into the Einstein democracy, they become relative. According to relativity, the mass of an object isn't constant. Matter is constantly being transformed into energy and vice versa, as E equals mc squared verified. But here, our ability to visualize breaks down. We are limited by the slowness of the brain, just because it is made out of matter. The electrical impulses inside the brain travel at great speed, but the thoughts they trigger are stepped down, like the enormous voltage and power lines being stepped down for household use. The only particles that move at exactly the speed of light are photons and other particles that have zero mass, such as the elusive neutrino, if indeed it has zero mass. If one could magically exceed the speed of light, time would run backward, a theoretical doorway back to the beginning of time. Einstein reasoned that this couldn't happen in a classical world, even one with relativistic effects. However, it may happen in a quantum world. All the permutations of time are quantum possibilities, which offers another valuable clue. If the quantum domain allows for time to stand still, move backward, or follow the arrow that moves from past to present to future, then there is no reason why the Big Bang favored any of these possibilities over the others. Asking why we happen to live in clock time is very much like asking why the universe fits together so perfectly. Clock time benefits human beings, just as the fine-tuned universe does. As with all life forms, humans cannot exist without birth and death, creation and destruction, ripeness and decay. These are the gifts of clock time, and although stars and galaxies also undergo birth and death, their life cycles are only a matter of shuffling matter and energy around on the cosmic game board. The human situation is much more complex, because unlike physical objects, we have mind, which creates new ideas born in a field of possibilities that seems infinite. The mystery of time somehow must be linked to how the human mind works. Let's see if the quantum revolution brought time and mind closer together. Are quanta on the clock? Going faster than the speed of light would be very embarrassing for relativity. And now it has happened. Recently, experimenters have found a way to move photons from one position to another without passing through the space in between. The first example of true teleportation. Because the photons skip from point A to point B instantaneously, no time elapses. The speed of light isn't actually exceeded. It's made irrelevant. We may say that time is bypassed. In fact, teleportation unravels the neat pop-up picture of space, time, and matter. Teleporting photons have enormous implications. Einstein's thinking, as we've been discovering, remained rooted in a classical world, and such a world is bound by the speed of light. Like wild horses released from a corral, if quantum objects can go beyond the speed of light, not by traveling faster, but through instantaneous action, something unknown lies ahead. One unknown has to do with how many dimensions actually exist. Clock time is one-dimensional. It travels in a straight line that occupies one dimension, as all straight lines do, that can only connect point A and point B. But in quantum theory, there is no limit to how many dimensions there are, since they exist as purely mathematical constructs. For example, a number of quantum theories require us to go beyond gravity to the field of supergravity, which posits 11 dimensions. The pre-created state before the Big Bang could be dimensionless, occupying zero dimensions, mathematically speaking. Or it could have infinite dimensions. The possibilities are head-spinning, being so far removed from everyday experience. We have to add our universe's three dimensions to the pile of dismantled absolutes. And time, the fourth dimension, may have to go with it. In mathematical terms, it already has. It is generally accepted that every particle is emerging here and now from a place of zero dimensions, namely the quantum vacuum. Some radical physicists even theorize that the only two numbers with any reality are zero and infinity. Zero is where the trick of turning nothing into something occurs. Infinity is how many possibilities can emerge on an absolute scale. Every number in between has the reality only of soap bubbles and smoke. Zero dimensions cannot be visualized, and even the mathematics can seem like a parlor trick, because so many variables are either unknown or sheer guesswork. But surely all of us exist, because the timeless, which has no beginning or end, expresses itself as time in the present moment. This transformation defies logic, which should come as no surprise by now. Since the quantum realm isn't on the clock, why not accept the truth that time is totally malleable? In that case,